This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Highly Illogical Behavior by John Corey Whaley. Read for you by Robbie Damond and Julia Whalen.
Part 1. Spring.
Chapter 1. Solomon Reed. Solomon never needed to leave the house anyway. He had food. He had water. He could see the mountains from his bedroom window. And his parents were so busy all the time that he pretty much got to be sole ruler of the house. Jason and Valerie Reed let it be this way because, eventually, giving in to their son's condition was the only way to make him better. So, by the time he turned 16, he hadn't left the house in 3 years, 2 months, and 1 day. He was pale and chronically barefoot, and it worked. It was the only thing that ever had. He did his schoolwork online, usually finishing it before his parents were home every evening, with bedhead and pajamas on. If the phone rang, he'd let it go to voicemail. And on the rare occasion that someone knocked on the door, he would look through the peephole until whoever it was, a Girl Scout, a politician, or maybe a neighbor, would give up and leave. Solomon lived in the only world that would have him. And even though it was quiet and mundane and sometimes lonely, it never got out of control. He hadn't made the decision lightly, and it should be said that he at least tried to make it out there for as long as possible, for as long as anyone like him could. Then one day, trying wasn't enough. So he stripped down to his boxers and sat in the fountain in front of his junior high school. And right there, with his classmates and teachers watching, with the morning sun blinding him, he slowly leaned back until his entire body was underwater. That was the last time Solomon Reed went to Upland Junior High, and, within a matter of days, he started refusing to go outside altogether. It was better that way. "It's better this way," he said to his mom, who begged him each morning to try harder. And really, it was. His panic attacks had been happening since he was 11, but over the course of just 2 years, he'd gone from having one every few months to once a month, to twice, and so on. By the time he hopped into the fountain like a lunatic, he was having mild to severe panic attacks up to 3 times daily. It was hell. After the fountain, he realized what he had to do. Take away the things that make you panic, and you won't panic. And then he spent 3 years wondering why everyone found that so hard to understand. All he was doing was living instead of dying. Some people get cancer. Some people get crazy. Nobody tries to take the chemo away. Solomon was born and will, in all likelihood, die in Upland, California. Upland is a suburb of Los Angeles, just about an hour east of downtown. It's in a part of the state they call the Inland Empire, which really floats Solomon's boat because it sounds like something from Star Trek, which is a television show he knows far too much about. His parents, Jason and Valerie, don't know too much about Star Trek, despite their son's insistence that it's a brilliant exploration of humanity. It makes him happy, though, so they'll watch an episode with him every now and then. They even ask questions about the characters from time to time, just so they can see that excited look he gets. Valerie Reed is a dentist with her own practice in Upland, and Jason builds movie sets on a studio lot in Burbank. You'd think this would lead to some great stories from work, but Jason's the kind of guy who thinks Dermot Mulroney and Dylan McDermott are interchangeable, so most of his celebrity sightings can't be trusted. A week after he turned 16, Solomon was growing impatient as his dad tried to tell him about an actor he'd seen on set earlier that day. "You know, the guy with the mustache, from the show with the theme song." "That's every show on TV, Dad." "Oh, you know the guy, the gun guy." "The gun guy? What does that even mean?" The guy. He holds the gun in the opening thing. I know you know the guy. I don't know. Hawaii 5-0? That's a movie, not an actor, his dad said. It's a television show. How can you work in Hollywood? You get your schoolwork done today? Solomon's mom asked as she walked into the living room. This morning. How's work? I got a new patient today. Keep bringing in those big bucks, his dad joked. Nobody laughed. She says she went to Upland Junior High. Lisa Prater? Does that ring a bell? Nope, Solomon replied. Nice girl. Beautiful molars. But she's going to need to get those wisdom teeth out in a year or two, or she'll have to get braces all over again. Did you have braces? Solomon asked. Headgear. It was awful. Oh, it all makes sense now. You want to put others through the torture of your childhood. Don't analyze me. Solomon, stop analyzing your mother, his dad said from behind a book. One of those creepy mystery novels he was always reading. Anyway, she's a nice girl. Pretty, too. Only one cavity. Solomon knew good and well what was going on. His mom was doing that thing she did where she thought talking about some pretty girl would suddenly cure her son and have him walking right out the front door and straight to high school. It was innocent enough, but he hoped she wasn't actually that desperate for him to change. Because if she was, then wouldn't these little moments built up over time eventually collapse into a mess? He'd heard their conversations about him a few times. When he was 10, he learned that if he held a plastic cup against his bedroom wall, he could hear everything his parents were saying in their bedroom. The last time he listened was when his mom asked his dad if they were going to be stuck with him forever. After she said it, he didn't hear anything for a while. Then he realized it was because she'd started crying as soon as the words left her mouth. Hours later, Solomon was still awake, wondering how to answer his mother's question. He eventually decided on a hard yes.
Chapter 2. Lisa Prater. Sometimes life just hands you the lemonade, straight up in a chilled glass with a little slice of lemon on top. For Lisa Prater, junior and straight-A student at Upland High, meeting Solomon Reed's mother was that glass of lemonade, and it was going to change her life. You may have known Elisa Prater at some point. She was the girl sitting at the front of your classroom, raising her hand to answer every single question the teacher asked. She stayed after school to work on the yearbook, and as soon as she got home, she dove headfirst into her homework. She'd always been one to keep a packed schedule, choosing at age 11 to live by the words of her great-aunt Dolores, who said, "Not a day on your calendar should ever be empty. It's bad luck. 24 hours of wasted opportunity." Not even an offer from her boyfriend to drive to the coast and watch the sunset could tempt her off schedule. And Clark Robbins was the kind of guy who asked her to do things like that all the time. He was handsome without being threatening, and his tree-bark brown hair parted in a way that was particularly appealing to Lisa. On the day that Lisa met Solomon's mom, she'd been dating Clark for a year and 17 days. She had it marked on her calendar for proof. During eighth grade, after a seventh grader had an episode in front of the school, Lisa wrote an op-ed piece for the Upland Junior High Register to defend the boy, a scathing essay on the importance of empathy. It didn't go over well with her classmates, and until the end of the year, rumors swirled around that Lisa was secretly dating the crazy kid who jumped into the fountain. Had it not been for the student body of nearly 1,000 at Upland Junior High, Lisa may not have been able to escape her failed attempt at heroism when she got to high school. She did, though, and most of her friends and classmates eventually forgot about it altogether. But not Lisa. She'd seen him that day, this skinny little guy with messy hair taking his shirt off and dropping his pants and walking that slow, quiet walk toward the water. She never knew him, really, but she'd always thought he looked nice, like the kind of guy who'd hold a door open for someone else without a thought. And she'd always hoped that someday she'd see him again, or, at the very least, hear that he was doing okay. Then one day, Lisa saw an advertisement for Valerie Reed's dental practice in the local newspaper. It took one internet search to confirm that this was Solomon's mother. She'd never really been looking for the fountain kid, despite thinking about him from time to time and wondering where he'd ended up, but the second she realized she'd found him, she knew she had to get to him as soon as possible, and the only way to do that was to make an appointment with his mom. At the very least, Lisa would get a nice teeth cleaning and a free toothbrush. At the very best, she'd make all her dreams come true. "So, where do you go to school?" Dr. Valerie Reed asked as she sat down to examine Lisa's teeth. It was March 24th, a Tuesday, and Lisa was having a really hard time not asking a million questions about Solomon.
"Upland High, are you Solomon's mother?"
"Yes," she answered, slightly taken aback.
"I went to junior high with him. His picture's on the wall."
She smiled, pointing across the room to a photograph of Valerie, Jason, and Solomon hanging by the window.
"You knew him?" Valerie asked. "Knew him?" Lisa asked. "Oh, did he?"
"No, God, no. Sorry," Valerie said. "He just doesn't get out much."
"Private school? Western Christian?"
"He's homeschooled."
"You do that and this?"
Lisa asked. "It's all online. Okay, lean back for me, open wide."
"I was there, you know," Lisa said, sitting straight up.
"Where?" Dr. Reed asked. She was beginning to look a little frustrated.
"That morning, I saw your son. I saw his incident."
"It was a panic attack," she said. "Can I get a look at those teeth now?"
"Just one more thing," Lisa said.
"Go on."
"Why doesn't he get out much?"
Dr. Reed stared down at her in silence, her mouth covered with a blue paper mask, but her eyes searching for the right answer. And just when she went to speak, Lisa interrupted her.
"It's just no one's seen him in so long. He was there and then he wasn't. It's strange is all. I thought maybe he went off to boarding school or something."
"He made it one day at Western Christian. What do you do if your kid won't leave the house?"
"Homeschool him.
It was our only option. Open wide."
As soon as Dr. Reed was done, Lisa picked right back up where she'd left off, not even waiting for her chair to be all the way upright again.
"When was the last time he left the house?"
"You sure are inquisitive, aren't you?"
"I'm sorry. Gosh, I'm so sorry. I never meant to be nosy. I've just thought a lot about him over the last few years, and when I realized you were his mom, I guess I got too excited."
"It's okay," she said. "I'm just glad somebody remembers him. It's been 3 years. A little over, actually."
"Is he okay?"
"Mostly, yeah. We make it work."
"Must get lonely," Lisa said.
"You'd think that, yes."
"Does he have any friends?"
"Not anymore. Used to, though. You guys all grow up so fast, he just couldn't keep up."
"Can you tell him I say hello? I doubt he'll know who I am, but just, you know, if it's not weird."
"I'll tell him, Lisa. And I'll see you next Tuesday to get this cavity fixed up."
Lying to adults was a little easier for Lisa than lying to her peers. Just like herself, none of her friends or classmates really trusted anyone, so lying was hard to get away with. But take someone like Valerie Reed, DDS, probably born in the late 70s to Southern California liberals, and you've got an easy target. Someone who wants to trust everyone so much that they don't see a lie when it's slapping them right in the face. In the grand scheme of things, Lisa knew it was harmless. A necessary step in taking her master plan from concept to actuality. And what a plan it was. She was going to fix Solomon Reed. Her life depended on it.
Chapter 3. Solomon Reed. Therapy didn't really work on Solomon because he didn't want it to. They tried taking him to someone when he was 12. After realizing his tantrums and crying fits were more than just being a spoiled suburban kid. But he wouldn't talk to the therapist. Not a single word. And what were Jason and Valerie supposed to do? How do you discipline someone who wants to spend all day in his room? If they grounded him from the computer or TV, he'd just read books all day. And neither of them was going to start taking his books away. He'd been a quiet, shy kid at school. The kid slumping in his desk in the back of the room that still managed to get A's and B's. There, he'd perfected the art of invisibility. But at home, he laughed and joked around with his parents. He even listened to music too loud sometimes and sang made-up songs while he helped do dishes or set the table. He was still in therapy when he had his meltdown at school. And so Jason and Valerie decided to try a new therapist, one who charged twice as much. Solomon went and, like always, said nothing. But he listened. He listened very well, and as soon as his first session was over, he'd figured out a way to quit seeing this therapist, too. And he wouldn't even have to lie about it. "She thinks you guys are abusing me or something."
"She said that?"
his dad asked. "Didn't have to," he answered. "Asked me all about your work schedules and whether or not you guys fight or yell. She's out for blood. I'm not going back." And he didn't. Who were they to argue against it either? When he was home, he was better. He was calm and happy and easy to get along with. The panic attacks were few and far between, and even though they'd never admit it, it actually made their lives much easier. No parent-teacher conferences, no driving him to school in the mornings and picking him up in the afternoons. At just 13 years old, he needed very little from his parents, and even less from the world. He wasn't bored, or lonely, or sad. He was safe. He could breathe. He could relax. Solomon never had a lot of friends in school. Just kids he'd say hi to or trade homework answers with from time to time. But somehow he'd always end up having lunch with this kid named Grant Larson. Grant was that sort to constantly talk about hot girls and action movies and which teachers he hated most. That is, when he wasn't bragging about his dad's cool job for an electric car company. "Then why don't you guys have one?" Solomon would ask him.
"We don't have any way to charge it at home yet. But soon, man, real soon."
Grant didn't mind so much that Solomon never talked about girls or bragged about his dad's cool job. He just liked being listened to, and that happened to be one of Solomon's strong suits. He'd nod and respond with one or two word answers. It was the only way he could sit there surrounded by hundreds of loud kids without freaking out. He would focus on Grant and keep quiet. Any more attention than that, and he risked having a panic attack right there in front of everyone. Like the one that eventually sealed his fate as the crazy kid. To his credit, Grant did come to see Solomon after the fountain. But at home, Solomon wasn't the muted listener he'd been at school. He was himself. And that was someone who Grant didn't seem to like very much. "You want to play a game or something?" Solomon asked one day, just a few weeks after leaving school.
"What kind? You got a PlayStation?"
"Oh, no. I suck at video games. I meant a card game or something. You like strategy games?"
"Are you asking me to play Dungeons and Dragons? Because hell no. I'd like to not die a virgin."
"That doesn't even make sense."
"Tell that to my Uncle Eric. Plays those nerdy games with all his nerdy friends all the time, and my mom says he'll probably be alone forever."
"She sounds nice," Solomon said under his breath.
"Don't be a dick. I'm just trying to say it's a little lame."
It wasn't lame. Not even a little. And it didn't take long for Solomon to realize that he didn't need a friend. Which worked out well, because after a few months and a few more failed attempts at hanging out, Grant eventually stopped coming over altogether. His parents asked him a few times what Grant was up to, why he'd been so busy, and Solomon just shrugged it off and said he didn't know. He knew. He was busy boring someone new to death. "See, Solomon's world wasn't lonely like you'd think. It wasn't dark and sad. It was small, sure, but it was comfortable. Why would it need to be anything but that? He knew his parents worried, though, and that was really the only thing that bothered him. What he wished more than anything was to be able to explain to them how much better it was now. But judging from their silence on the issue and his lack of a therapist, he figured they already knew.
Chapter 4. Lisa Prater. Lisa had learned some important things from her mother, like how to put on mascara while driving and what time of year it's okay to wear white shoes. But mostly Lisa learned that if she settled for a life she didn't want, then she'd end up just like her, overworked, mildly depressed, and failing miserably at a third marriage. Lisa wanted more than Upland, California. It wasn't the worst place on earth by any means, but it wasn't her place. Someone like Clark could live there forever, happy enough to have a quiet little life and never make too many waves. But Lisa needed something bigger. She wanted to be important, and that wasn't going to happen in the Inland Empire. Luckily, with her junior year coming to a close, Lisa saw an end in sight. And now that she had an appointment to see Solomon Reed's mom again, she was feeling pretty confident about her escape plan. She still wasn't sure what to do about Clark, though. She loved him. It was hard not to, but every attempt she'd made at taking things to the next level had been shot down. He didn't want to talk about college, always saying he just wasn't ready yet. And despite his looks and confidence, it turned out he wasn't ready for some other things either. Clark wanted to wait. Lisa wasn't sure what exactly he wanted to wait for, but every time she tried to initiate anything even close to sex, he'd remind her that it wasn't the right time yet. Of course, she never once considered that the problem could be her. "He's religious," she told her friend Janice on the phone. "That's why, right?" Janice Plutko had been Lisa's best friend since the first grade, but ever since she'd become a born-again Christian sophomore year, Lisa had felt a lot of distance from her. She didn't have a problem with it, but sometimes she wasn't so sure Janice knew the difference between being religious and acting that way. "Please," Janice said. "I've dated 3 guys from Sunday school, and every single one tried to feel me up. God's not your problem, Lisa." "Well, what is it then? And don't say it's me, it's not." "Lisa, he's on the water polo team, and he has 3 older brothers," Janice said. "What? Not again, Janice, he's not gay. Scientifically and superficially, these facts do not help his case for heterosexuality." "What the hell are you talking about? They say the more older brothers you have, the more likely you are to be homosexual. For males, at least. And do I even have to explain to you why water polo is gay?" "Boys in Speedos playing around in a pool," Lisa said. "I get it, but he's not gay." "Whatever you want to tell yourself, Lisa. But don't count this out. I have an instinct for these things. Best gaydar in town." "The thing is, I don't really care that much right now." "Lisa, I think you should probably care about something like this." "Maybe everyone else should just care less about it. I've got too much to do anyway. Sex should be the last thing on my mind." "See? You'd make a great Christian. Maybe just start going to church and he'll be all over you." "I'm afraid I'd catch on fire as soon as I walked in." "I'd be afraid of that too," Janice snapped. "I love him. I'm pretty sure he loves me. So for now, what's it matter?" "This conversation started because of your sexual frustration." "Even so, like I said, sex is distracting. I need to focus on school and on getting out of here." "Will you tell me about the dentist now?" Janice asked. "She was nice, and I was right. He hasn't left the house in years." "Fascinating," Janice said. "I wouldn't leave the house either if I'd done what he did." "He couldn't help it," Lisa defended. "Honestly, I don't know why you care so much about a kid you never met." Lisa's plan had been taking shape for some time before she actually met Solomon's mother, but she wasn't quite ready to tell Janice about it. Sometimes when you're doing something you maybe shouldn't be doing in the first place, the last thing you need is someone like Janice to tell you why you shouldn't be doing it. Lisa was smart enough to know the risks, and she'd already made up her mind. Later that evening, at Clark's house, Lisa tried bringing up college to see if she could get some idea of what was going on in that head of his.
"Given any more thought to schools on the East Coast?" she asked.
"I was researching the other day," Clark replied. "Then I felt way too grown up and played video games instead."
"Well, I finally decided for sure, so maybe you can plan around where I go."
"Okay, where?"
"Woodlawn University. They have the second highest-ranked psychology program in the country."
"Why not go for the first?"
"Because I know I can be top of my class at one, and I'm slightly unsure I could be at the other."
"You're like Lady Macbeth without the murder."
"Thank you. You have no idea how much of a compliment that is to me."
"So I should be looking at schools close by? Where is that, Oregon?"
"Maryland," she corrected. "Baltimore."
"I always wanted to see Poe's grave."
"Ridiculous," she said. "I have never understood this universal fascination with grave sites. It's morbid and just sad."
"I go to my granddad's grave sometimes. It's nice."
"Sorry."
"Doesn't matter to me," he said. "I like what I like. You like what you like."
"What do you do there? Just look at it and be sad?"
"No. Usually I just pray or talk to my granddad like he's still here. It honestly makes me happier than it does sad."
"People are strange, aren't they?"
"Is that why you're so dead set on fixing us all?" Clark asked.
"Not you," she said quickly. "You're good like you are."
"Thanks. So, Woodlaw."
"Woodlawn," she corrected.
"Yeah, that. Can you get in?"
"With my eyes closed."
"What do you have to do? An essay or something?"
"Yeah, my personal experience with mental illness."
"Shouldn't be too hard," he laughed. "You can just write about your mom, or maybe my mom. She's legitimately insane."
"No, it has to be unique. It has to be the best one they read, maybe the best one they've ever read. They give one scholarship a year, full ride." And she knew exactly what she was going to write about. It had practically hit her over the head the second she saw Dr. Reed's ad in the paper. She needed to find Solomon, charm him, and counsel him back to health. Then she'd record it all in her essay to Woodlawn and be well on her way to securing her place among the greatest psychological minds of the 21st century. They'd be naming a building after her by the time she had grandkids. But she'd need to get started soon if she wanted to have guaranteed success, especially since, by the sound of it, she could be dealing with a full-blown agoraphobe. That isn't something a person can conquer in a few weeks. Lisa would need several months with him to make the kind of progress she wanted, and she was already nearing the end of her junior year. That would allow just enough time to get her application in early. She wouldn't settle for being waitlisted, and she wasn't about to apply to the third-best psych program in the country. This was where she belonged, and it was where she'd end up, no matter what. "I'm going to write about my cousin," Lisa said.
"The one in the place?"
"Institution," she corrected. "I met him once. He gets out sometimes. Gets to come home for a weekend or two a year. It's weird. I've always wanted to talk to him or try to get to know him. I never do, though."
"I'd be careful there," Clark advised. "No telling what could be wrong if he has to live away from everyone like that."
"No telling," she said. "But maybe I'll try to talk to him anyway." Despite her interest in psychology, Lisa wasn't really planning to talk to her cousin, or anyone in her family for that matter. She could barely stand being in a room with her mom, and her dad's birthday cards quit coming when she turned 9. She just needed a good cover so Clark wouldn't find out about Solomon. Not yet, anyway. You don't go telling your boyfriend that you need to spend a few months with another guy, especially one with a history of emotional instability and public meltdowns. She'd find the right time. Ignorance was bliss to Clark, so she was just doing him a favor anyway. He could wait a little longer to find out about her project. After all, it seemed like he really liked waiting on things.
Chapter 5. Solomon Reed. By most people's standards, Solomon was a pretty weird kid. There was the agoraphobic thing, sure, but there were other things, too. He had impossibly weird eating habits, refusing to eat anything green, without exception, and having a substantial fear of coconut. Most days, he walked around half-clothed with a persistent case of bedhead and a red line across his stomach, where he'd rested the edge of his laptop while he did his schoolwork or streamed movies online. And despite being terrible at video games, he'd ask his dad to play them just so he could watch for hours and hours. Oh. And he said his thoughts aloud sometimes. Not all the time, but often enough so his parents expected to round a corner and hear him saying something that made no sense to anyone else. The day after his mom met Lisa Prater, she walked into his room at just the right time. "Antwerp," he said, sitting at his desk and not realizing she was behind him. "Who are you calling a twerp, twerp?" she said. He spun around slowly in his chair until he was facing her. His cheeks were a little red, but they'd be back to normal soon enough. He'd spent a lot of time with his parents, so there were few things left that could embarrass him. "You know that new patient I was telling you about? The one from your school? Lisa something?" "Prater," she said. "She sure was asking a lot about you." "Well, it seems like she's all you can talk about lately. Are you trying to say I don't have perfect molars? Are you going to trade me in? I haven't ruled it out." "And she was asking a lot about me? That's creepy, Mom." "She wasn't creepy at all. A little nosy, I guess. But not creepy. It's nice to know someone out there is thinking about you, isn't it?" Solomon didn't really know what to say. So someone out there had been thinking about him. Great. What was he supposed to do with that? Invite her over for brunch? "I guess." "It wouldn't hurt you to have a friend or two, you know?"
"We're not friends? You're saying we're not friends?"
he joked, raising his voice and using a mobster accent. "I'm saying your only friends shouldn't be middle-aged, and they certainly shouldn't be your parents." "I don't see anything wrong with it," he said.
"Oh, my God!"
She grabbed both sides of his face.
"You're as hopeless as your dad."
Valerie Reed lived with older and younger versions of the same man. A minimalist introvert who never talked about his feelings and obsessed over ridiculous things. She managed to make it through their weekly viewings of old science fiction films and the in-depth conversations that would always follow. But she did like to joke that watching movies with them was like pulling teeth. Get it? Of course you do. "You know, you could probably reconnect with some of your old school friends online," she continued. "Why would I want to do that, Mom?" "For fun? I don't know." "I have plenty of fun," he said. "Fine." She raised one hand into the air and walked away. "I've got to go pay bills." Solomon wondered if he'd ever have his own bills to pay. He didn't plan on leaving the house again. Ever. But even at 16, he was starting to feel guilty for always being there, and for planning to always be there. His parents weren't the type to sit around growing old. He knew they'd want to travel or maybe even move somewhere else after retirement. On some days, especially when his mom would hint at him getting better in even a small way, he felt like the biggest and only problem in their lives. And he didn't want his cure to be their life sentence. After his mom left the room, Solomon went back to his schoolwork. But every now and then, he'd get online and do research. He didn't miss much about the outside world. Target, sometimes, with its organized shelves and relaxing department store music. Some of his favorite restaurants, sure. Oh, and he really missed the way it smelled outside when it was about to rain, and the way the heavy drops would feel on his skin. This, though, he'd been able to enjoy by sticking his arm out of a window from time to time. Water calmed him down. He didn't know why, but it helped. He'd lie in the bath for an hour or more, his eyes closed, focusing his attention on the whirring of the bathroom vent. And that blocked it all out. Anything that could make him worse. Any thoughts that could start looping around and around in his mind. He knew that when it happened, he was supposed to close his eyes and count to 10, and take slow, deep breaths. But that never worked like the water did. So, for weeks, he'd been secretly working up the nerve to ask his parents for a pool. But how could he even mention the idea of it if he couldn't promise to go outside? He thought maybe he'd be ready by the time they could have a pool put in, since he wasn't especially afraid of the outdoors anyway. It was the potential chaos that lay beyond their yard that scared him. Plus, he could damn sure use the exercise, because running on a treadmill had become mind-numbing. It's just that when you're afraid of dying, you'll do whatever it takes to keep yourself pretty healthy, and the pool would help. He'd been fantasizing for weeks about waking up every morning and starting the day with a long swim. And as much as he hated to admit it even to himself, he would imagine the warm beams of sun heating up his skin and eventually help him look less like a walking corpse. Even in his isolation, Solomon wasn't completely immune to superficiality. He didn't know why he cared about his looks, but he did. And at the very least, he hoped it was one more sign to his parents that his life was sustainable and not some statement against civilization. Solomon hoped maybe if they thought it would help him, his parents would say yes to the pool. But sitting there at his computer, thinking about what he'd be expected to do, his breathing starts to pick up. He didn't want to waste their money, sure, but most of all, he didn't want to give them hope and then let them down. He turned away from the computer and bent forward, resting his elbows on his knees and hanging his head down as low as he could. This is how it always started. Everything would be fine, and then a sudden sinking feeling would come over him, like his chest was going to cave in. He could feel his heart bumping up against his ribcage, wanting out, quickening with every beat, and then radiating down his arms and up to his temples. It vibrated him, making everything he saw bounce around like the world was just photographs being flipped in front of him. And with everything around him muffled but still noisy, all he could do was focus on breathing and close his eyes tight and count. Every number had an image attached to it. He saw himself standing at the back door, looking out at a brand new pool, his parents beside him. And then he saw the looks of disappointment on their faces when they realized he was frozen in place and that it had all been for nothing. When he got to 100, he sat back up and closed his laptop. He needed a break. He couldn't think about the pool anymore. He couldn't think about what the pool meant to him or to them. He couldn't do anything but go to the garage, lie on the cold cement floor, and close his eyes again. The panic attacks drained him, like he'd just run a marathon, so it always took a little while to recover. So he lay there in the dark, without them ever knowing he wasn't okay. Because he'd learned a long time ago that the better they thought he was, the longer he could live this way.
Chapter 6. Lisa Prater. 1 week after her first appointment, Lisa was back in Dr. Reed's office and waiting to get her cavity filled. She'd written a letter, which was sealed in a light blue envelope and tucked into the front pocket of her hoodie. She'd start with that, and if it didn't get her closer to Solomon, she'd find another way. She was almost certain she could convince Dr. Reed that her son needed a friend, but she was hoping the letter would get her in sooner. It had been a long day at school, with 3 tests and a student council meeting, but Lisa still managed to exude a level of energy that no one in the small dental office could match. This wasn't her usual demeanor.
She was more of a pragmatic know-it-all with control issues, but she was smart enough to know that you catch more flies with honey, so this cheery, inquisitive version of herself seemed like the best way to charm Dr. Reed. Once seated in the exam chair, she chit-chatted with the dental hygienist, Kathy, who was setting out some tools. But her eyes kept wandering over to the family photo hanging on the wall by the window, the photograph of Solomon Reed the way he was when she last saw him, only not soaking wet and hyperventilating. She wondered what he looked like now, having witnessed firsthand what 3 years in the life of a teenage boy can do. 3 years before, Clark had been a chubby eighth grader with acne problems, and now look at him. "Well, Lisa, you ready to get that cavity filled?" Dr. Reed asked, walking in and taking a seat next to the exam chair. "You know it," Lisa answered. "How's life?"
"Life's good. Same as last week. Very busy."
She didn't give Lisa much opportunity to speak after that, quickly asking her to open wide and getting started on the anesthetic. Valerie Reed was a beautiful woman. She had laugh lines around her eyes and mouth, but the kind that made you envious of whatever put them there. Lisa had expected a hardened, maybe bitter person to be this troubled boy's mother, but Valerie Reed seemed as happy as could be.
"What's he like?" Lisa asked, her face half numb.
"Who? Solomon? Gosh, he's just Solomon."
"Oh. Well, what does he like to do?"
"He likes to watch TV and read books. He's just like his dad."
"So how come that's the most recent picture I see around here?" she said.
"I don't know, Lisa. We don't take too many pictures just sitting around the house. And I think maybe I lucked out with the one teenager on Earth who doesn't constantly take selfies."
"It's about insecurity," Lisa said. "I don't get it either. Maybe Solomon and I are just mature for our ages."
"He has his moments."
"Can you give this to him?"
Lisa pulled out the letter.
"I know maybe it's weird, but I just thought he might like it. You can even read it first if you want."
Dr. Reed looked down at the envelope and smirked a little, like she wasn't surprised at all that Lisa had written it.
"No, no, I don't need to do that. I'll give it to him. I can't promise you'll ever hear back, but I can promise he'll get it."
"Thank you so much."
As Dr. Reed filled the cavity in her lower right second bicuspid, Lisa closed her eyes and let her mind wander with the sound of the drill drowning out all the noise of the dental office. She thought about lonely Solomon Reed, sitting in a house all by himself with no clue that she was about to change his life. And even though there were a couple of fingers and a suction tube in her mouth, Lisa managed a smile. When she got home, Clark was waiting in her driveway with a milkshake in his hand. He did things like that all the time, and it still surprised her.
"I can't feel half my face," she said, once out of her car.
"Can you feel this?"
He stepped forward and poked her cheek.
"Nope."
"Weird. I've never had a cavity, so, you know, I wouldn't really know."
"Yeah, yeah, give me my milkshake."
"Oh, this milkshake? No, this is my milkshake."
He took a sip and then held it high above his head where she couldn't reach. He was tall anyway, about 6'1", and with his long, apish arms in the air, Lisa was screwed. So she went for his biggest weakness and started for his underarms. Being tickled made him physically ill, something left over from having grown up with all those older brothers. He practically threw the milkshake at her to make her stop.
"Mean," he said. "You're just stone-cold mean."
"Can we go inside now? I think the lidocaine's making me woozy."
In her room, Lisa finished her homework while Clark flipped through a magazine and kept her company. He had homework, too, but he was more the kind of guy to say he'd wake up early the next morning and do it, and then botch the whole plan and get the answers from one of his classmates instead. He was smart, but not as smart as he was handsome, and not near as smart as he was athletic. Water polo was his life, mostly, but the season was over now, so he spent most of his free time with Lisa. So much of it that she was starting to wonder where the hell all of his friends were.
"Where the hell are all of your friends?" she asked, slurring a little.
"The guys from the team? I don't know. Probably with their girlfriends."
"It just seems like you haven't hung out with them lately."
"I'm sure I haven't missed much," he said.
They pretty much drink beer and talk about sex. It's exactly what you'd imagine.
So, Clark was bored with his friends. That would make a lot of sense, seeing as most of them were fairly boring. Lisa was more of a one-close-friend type of person, and had always had trouble fitting in with Clark's teammates and their girlfriends. But this was her first time realizing that maybe Clark felt the same way.
"How's the college essay?"
he asked. "Slow," she said.
"Are you still going to write about your cousin?"
Lisa needed to tell him about Solomon. She knew she could keep lying, but she'd already cleared her spring and summer to spend time helping Solomon get better, to make sure she'd actually have something to write about, something groundbreaking enough to get her that scholarship. Plus, Clark trusted Lisa, and even if he did think her plan was unethical, he'd never try to talk her out of it. Or at least, he'd never succeed at it. "Hey, do you remember me telling you about that kid who jumped in the fountain in 8th grade? She asked.
"I do," he answered. "What about him?"
"I found him."
"I didn't know you were looking for him."
"I wasn't. It's the weirdest thing. My new dentist is his mom. I didn't piece it together until I saw a picture of him in her office. Crazy, right?"
"Totally. Where's he been?"
"Home."
"Oh, that's kind of boring. I was hoping for something more dramatic."
"He's only been home," she says. "Nowhere else."
"Since 8th grade?
"Yep."
"Weird. What do you think's wrong with him?"
"Well, lots of things, probably. You don't become homebound for no reason. His mom said he had panic attacks, like at the fountain, so I'm guessing they kept getting worse and worse. So, preliminarily, I'd say he's got severe anxiety disorder that's contributed to a very persistent case of agoraphobia, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's got some obsessive-compulsive tendencies as well."
"That's sad."
"I'm going to ask you something, and I want you to promise to be completely honest with me, okay?"
"Okay."
"I want to meet Solomon Reed. I don't know why I need to do it, but I do, and I think maybe I can make that happen."
"Okay."
He laughed.
"This is unexpected."
"It's just, you know, I've thought about him so much and wondered if he was okay, and maybe it sounds crazy, but I just need to see for myself."
"Lisa, you didn't even know the guy."
"I know, but what if I can help him, Clark? This is what I want to do with my life, and I feel like passing up an opportunity like this is..."
"I'm not stupid," he interrupted. "This is for the essay, right?"
She didn't say anything, but she nodded her head with her eyes lowered, afraid to see the disapproval on his face.
"How long have you been planning this?"
he asked. "Weeks," she confessed. "I'm sorry, I didn't want to make it a big deal if it wasn't going to come to anything, but his mom's giving him a letter I wrote. Hopefully he'll respond."
"A letter? You wrote him a letter? Who are you, Lisa? My God!"
"It's important to me, Clark. I can help him."
"You never wrote me a letter."
"Oh, come on. You're jealous? Lock yourself away inside a house for 3 years and I'll write one up."
"That's not funny," he said.
"It's a little funny. I know it sounds awful, but I can help him. I need him, and he needs me. It's not just about the scholarship. But say the word, and I'll stop." He wasn't going to stop Lisa from doing anything, and she knew it. And she could hardly expect him to be jealous over Solomon, especially after she'd been so upfront about it. She knew it was weird that she'd reached out to him the way she had, but she also knew that there were a lot of people in the world who regretted never doing the things they felt were right because they were afraid of seeming strange or crazy. Lisa wouldn't settle for that sort of mediocre existence, one bound by invisible social cues, and she had a good feeling that someone like Solomon Reed would appreciate that.
Chapter 7. Solomon Reed. Solomon had never gotten a letter before. Ever. It was 2015, after all, and even if he had been more social, or perhaps not been a shut-in for almost a fifth of his life, he still could have probably gone on forever without getting one. So when his mom handed him the blue envelope with his name scribbled on the front, he looked at her like she'd just handed him a rotary telephone or something. "What do I do with this?" he asked.
"Read it, dummy," she said.
rolling her eyes as she walked away. Solomon ripped it open at one end, slid the letter out, and unfolded it, looking around the kitchen like maybe he was being pranked or something. It read, "Dear Solomon, you don't know me, and I doubt you've ever even heard of me, but my name is Lisa Prater, and I want to be your friend. I know that sounds ridiculous, of course it does, but I also know that you can't go through life never pursuing what it is you really want, and for whatever reason, at this time in my life, right now, I want to be your friend. I saw you that last day you went to school. I saw you, and I was so scared for you. And if you're still even reading this, I want you to know that I've spent years trying to figure out just why that boy jumped into the fountain that morning at Upland Junior High. Then, by some act of God herself, my new dentist turns out to be your mother. This universe sends us signs sometimes, and whatever you believe or don't believe, this means something. I know your situation is different from mine. I know you have chosen to live a certain way, and I respect that. So I hope you'll at least give some thought into having a friend out here. I could sure use one, and I bet, at the very least, you could use a little conversation from someone who doesn't know what the word escrow means. Sincerely, Lisa Prater, 909-555-8010. I don't need a friend, he said aloud to himself. Are you hearing voices, Saul? His mom teased from the other room. Solomon walked out with the letter in his hand and stared right at her. She shook her head a little, and he could tell she was trying to keep her smile as best she could. It'll turn out just like Grant, he said. Why bother? Honey, Grant was a jerk. He was just normal, Solomon defended. I don't know how to be around people like that. Are you saying I'm weird? Your dad's weird? I'm serious, Mom, he said. What am I supposed to say to her? What'll we talk about? I don't go to school. I don't go anywhere. Your problem is that you've never had a real friend, Saul, she said. Give it a try, why don't you? No way, he said, setting the letter down and walking back to his bedroom. An hour later, Solomon was still lying on his floor staring up at the ceiling. Their house was built in the 70s, so it had that weird gold glitter mixed in with the white popcorn plaster on its ceilings. Solomon liked to count the little shiny flecks, but never made it past 100 before his eyes started going blurry, and they all seemed to blink and glow like they were real stars, like the roof had been ripped off his house, and he could see them again. He didn't really know if he wanted a friend. Some days were lonely, sure. Always quiet, but that was something he'd gotten used to a long time ago. And like his mom said, he hadn't had a real friend in a long time. So what did he know about being one? Jack Squat, that's what. He didn't fit in when he was in school, so how would he feel now, around someone whose life is out there where he's nothing but an alien? What he feared most was that all this hiding had made it impossible for him to ever be found again. On top of that, Solomon was a little weirded out by the whole thing. He'd basically gotten a letter from his stalker, and his mom was acting like they should be throwing a party over it. He didn't know if he could trust her on matters like this, when she could just be trying to push him closer to leaving the house again. His dad, though, always knew what to say. Dad, Solomon said, walking into the living room.
There he is, Han Solo himself, rebel without a cause.
Mom tell you about the letter? She read it to me. Sounds about right, Solomon said.
Weird, huh?
So weird. Solomon took a seat on the couch and picked the letter up off the coffee table. He read back over the first few lines before looking up at his dad with worry in his eyes.
It's a quandary, his dad said,
On the one hand, she seems pretty genuine. On the other hand, you shouldn't trust people who send letters to complete strangers asking to be their friends.
Exactly.
But your mom says you've got nothing to lose.
Yeah, but that's not true. I have a lot to lose. I like it here, Dad. The way it is. I get that I'm the only one who sees it that way. But can you guys at least try to understand that bringing someone else in here, changing everything, that it could make me go crazy again?
You were never crazy. Don't say that.
Solomon knew very well that saying crazy was a sure way to make his dad get serious. Jason could insert a bad punchline into any conversation. Most of the time, Solomon loved this about his dad. But not when he was desperate for help. Tell me what to do, Dad. Please.
Sleep on it, he said.
I'm afraid I won't be able to.
I don't know then, Sol. What would the robot do?
He's an android, but you're a genius, Dad, he said, getting up from his seat.
You thought you got it from your mom?
That android wasn't real, of course, but was the character Data from Star Trek The Next Generation, or STTNG. Solomon had seen every good episode of STTNG at least 9 times, and every not-so-good episode 3 times or more, depending on how not-so-good it was. So he had a few ideas about where he could find some answers. And yes, he got answers to a lot of life's questions from the show. When you only have your parents and your grandma to talk to, you figure out ways to learn about the world. And Solomon, for reasons that made terrific sense to him, had chosen a 90s space drama to forever be his compass. After settling into his favorite chair with an alarming amount of candy, Solomon watched 8 episodes in a row. It should be very obvious to you why Solomon would feel so deeply connected to Data. A character who, as an android, lived just on the edge of humanity. Because of this, Data always found a way to say something wise and painfully simple about existence. And even before he stopped leaving the house, Solomon had proclaimed the character to be his personal hero. When he was halfway through the 8th episode, Solomon found what he'd been looking for. In it, 2 characters are thought to be dead after a run-in with another ship. And there's this moment where Lieutenant Commander Data says that Geordi, one of the men feared dead, treated him just like he treated everyone else. He accepted him for what he was. And that, Data concluded, was true friendship. Maybe he'd never realized it before, but when Solomon heard it, he suddenly knew why Lisa Prater scared the complete shit out of him. Because, like Data, he didn't want to be treated just as different as he was. But he already knew he was scared. So Data's wise words were only validation that he wasn't brave enough to invite Lisa over just yet. Maybe he needed someone wiser than Data, even though it pained him to admit it. He needed his grandmother. And, luckily, she was coming over for dinner. She wasn't like most grandmas, he was sure. For one thing, she was fairly young. She had Jason, her only child, when she was 20. This was shortly after she'd left her small town in Louisiana to move out to Los Angeles and become an actress. 1 commercial and a Vegas wedding later, she'd gone from Hollywood hopeful to suburban housewife. And she loved it. Now, in her mid-60s, she drove the sports car she'd always wanted and acted like the star she'd never become. She'd taken up selling real estate after Solomon's grandfather died in the 80s. And by the time Solomon was born, she had an empire. And if he could leave the house, he'd see her face on signs in yards all over Upland.
"This is wonderful," she shouted immediately after reading the letter,
her southern accent peeking through every word.
Wonderful?
Yes. Sounds like my kind of girl. She knows what she wants and she goes after it. But why would she want me? I mean, want to be friends with me?